Hello, souls and demons. It's been some time, so welcome back. I've been a bit busy with some personal things, but now I plan on making my return. So mark your calendars and try and check back every Sunday for a new episode. Tonight I have found some true ghost and apparition stories. Well, supposedly true. As with all things posted online, you should take the truth with a grain of salt. And with that, sit back, grip your seats, and enjoy. This happened in 2016. When I accompanied my paternal uncle to the goddess's temple, located in Uttar Pradesh, one of the major Shaktipeeth seats of the goddess in India. My aunt had been stuck in labor for quite a while, and someone suggested that she may have fallen victim to a tantric ritual called bandhan, binding, that causes a delay in childbirth. My uncle knew a priest in the temple who was considered to be adept in occult sciences and had reached out to him for help. We met the priest, who was dressed in a modest saffron robe and had an air of humbleness around him. I could not even suspect anything that was about to happen in the next few hours. He confirmed that someone had done a Masani Kriya, graveyard ritual, on my aunt, and if not reversed within time, it could end up in miscarriage or even death. We were horrified and could not believe what was being told to us. But he assured us she could be saved, provided we started the yagya, ceremonial fire, and other rituals on time. So, on the banks of the river Ganges, he lit a ceremonial fire and asked us to keep putting oblations into the fire when told. The ritual went on for a time, when the strangest thing I've ever experienced in my life happened. Suddenly, scores of subhuman creatures started coming from nowhere and began sitting around us in a circle. I cannot describe exactly how they looked, but all of them were stunted and had deformed legs or hands, with pus oozing out of their wounds. They looked very similar to humans, but there was something otherworldly about them that I can't put my finger upon. Now my uncle is a very serious and grumpy guy, you know the kind, and with the situation at hand, wasn't in a good mood that day. I could see he thought those creatures were beggars, and was about to tell them to bugger off. But the priest, who seemed unfazed by the bizarre situation, put a finger on his lips and gestured him to remain quiet. As the ritual was about to end, the creatures disappeared as strangely as they had arrived. After the ritual ended, the priest asked for a bit of time to dispose the residue of the yagya into the Ganges. Meanwhile, my uncle had toured the entire temple to find out where those creatures could have gone, but in vain. When the priest returned, I asked him about what we had just seen. He explained that those spirits that were being used to torment our aunt had arrived to distract us from our ritual. Like humans, they were also attached to the earth and do not want to cross over. Had any one of us reacted or got up from our place, and our aunt would be doomed. This is the reason he had gestured us to remain calm. Curiosity arose in my mind and I asked, "Have you ever seen God?" "No, but I have seen the devil," he said. I was bewildered to hear this because, apart from the obvious vision of the devil himself, Satan is predominantly a Christian spirit, and the priest was an Orthodox Hindu. Moreover, the concept of Satan, Lucifer, Shaitan did not exist in Hinduism. Before I became a priest, I was a Vaimachari, left-hand tantric, and had once got a chance to perform a ritual in an abandoned Christian graveyard. The specifics of the ritual are arcane, but you have to write a mantra on a piece of paper and make a wick out of it. The wick is then placed in an oil lamp and set alight. During midnight, 11 rounds of the mantra are to be recited in the graveyard while the wick is burning. Now, these demons do not like anyone trying to gain power over them, and will do anything possible to distract from the ritual. Sometimes, you'll see maidens wearing diaphanous garments, strutting around the graveyard and hear their anklets tinkling. At other times, you'll hear the voices of your family screaming for help, babies crying, and other hallucinations. If you sit steadfast, perform the ritual for 21 continuous days and not get distracted, the Prince of Demons, Satan himself, comes on the last day and begs for the oil left in the lamp. I describe Satan as being black, extremely hairy with horns, and walks with his hands and feet to the ground like an animal. He also makes a ko sound. This part is extremely treacherous, since it's a trap laid out by Satan to distract the practitioner. You have to give the oil to Satan, after which Satan will tempt you to ask for anything you want. If at this point you ask for anything, be it riches, women, or what have you, or refuse to give the oil, you are doomed and will have to suffer from lunacy throughout the remainder of your miserable life. The only acceptable request is to ask Satan to leave you alone so you can complete your ritual in peace. Once the ritual is complete, you'll gain the ability to exorcise any demon with ease. Suddenly, my uncle's mobile rang. It was the midwife calling to inform that his son had been delivered safely. I wish I could tell you that attacks on my aunt ceased after this event. They didn't. In the years to follow, my uncle would sometimes find pieces of dog bones tightly wrapped in red cloth, scattered around the precarious corners of the house. As mentioned earlier, my uncle began finding pieces of dog bones wrapped tightly in red cloth around the precarious corners of the house. A tantric confirmed that this was the manifestation of black magic, and that one of the grand aunts who lived in the ancestral village had been doing it. He also told us that the ritual performed on our family involved stuffing a live chicken inside a matka, an earthen pot, and then burying it deep inside the earth. Now in our case, the matka, called a Maran Petra, killing bowl, had been buried 7 hastas, handful deep. This meant that the ritual was irreversible, and similar to a kamikaze attack, would affect the caster too later in life. But my grandmother was in denial that her sister could do anything so ghastly, and forbade us from confronting her. This specific grandaunt had always been jealous of my grandmother, because she was sterile. On the other hand, my grandmother had 3 sons, which in the socio-patriarchal society of Bihar was considered extremely desirable. When my uncle was an infant, he'd start running high fever whenever they visited the ancestral village. The fever would subside as soon as a protective locket was placed around his neck, given to my grandmother by a temple priest. Once, my uncle was running a high temperature even when the locket was firmly in place. When contacted, the priest calmly told my grandmother that someone had removed the yantra, comic diagram, placed inside the locket, and that he'd been sending her a new one. The locket did indeed turn out to be empty. My aunt passed away after a short illness in 2019, leaving behind her 2-year-old son. We did not suspect any foul play, although what happened in the next few days led us to believe we were missing something. In Hindu tradition, a 13-day period of mourning, Tirhavi, is declared from the day the loved one passes. Throughout these 13 days, our house was behest with paranormal activity. Toys placed near the baby's crib would suddenly switch themselves on and make shrill noises. The baby would bounce around the crib as if some unseen force was trying to lift it and failing. The utensils rack would start shaking in the middle of the night, and lights would flicker for no apparent reason. A part of Terhavi ritual involves offering a ball of flour to crows and other small animals, whom we consider to be the reincarnation of our ancestors. In my aunt's case, the animals refused to come near the offerings, let alone partake any of it. Most of the relatives insinuated that our aunt was still attached to her son and was refusing to cross over. Then on the 13th day, our suspicions were confirmed when something happened that I'm still unable to explain to this day. On the first day of Terhavi, an earthen lamp called Dia is lighted inside the bedroom where the deceased resided. On each successive day, the lamp is placed a little farther from the bedroom and towards the exit door, symbolically giving a send-off to the departed soul. On the final day, the lamp is to be placed outside the house, giving finality to the soul and that it had crossed over. When my aunt's lamp was placed outside the house, the wick refused to catch fire. I say refused because we went through a box of matches trying to light the dia, but in vain. Some of the oil spilled over on the box, rendering the leftover matches useless. Someone was sent outside to get a fresh box. Lighter and stovefire cannot be used, since it is considered sacrilegious. Overtly religious aunts of the family began crying at this sight, when one of them struck upon an idea. For context, there is a Pran Prathisit, which is life-infused idol, of the goddess Kali enshrined in our home. My grandfather had requisitioned the idol from a Shakti worshipper in 1977, but could not bring her home till 1978, since Indira Gandhi had imposed emergency throughout India. He used to worship her by giving oblations of his own blood. So, for 40 continuous years, she has been worshipped by our family and treated as a mother. She is offered food twice a day, bathed and cleaned by the female members, and is offered a golden chain on every occasion. Once, there was a great fire in the slum area near our house and our maid, who suffered serious burns and lost everything in it. When we went to visit her in the hospital, she fell at the feet of my grandfather, wailing and confessing that she had stolen a chain from the mother goddess's neck, and that what happened to her was retribution. Another time, my mother didn't want to attend a wedding and prayed to her that she be excused from the event. The next day, my mother's entire luggage that included her jewelry and finery was stolen from the train, and she spent the entire day inside a police station, then the wedding. I could go on and on about her stories, but I will confine myself to this event. Finally, one of my aunts rushed to Mother Kali's shrine and with folded hands screamed, "Mother, please help her." To our surprise, the wick instantly caught flame. The rest of the rituals performed were uneventful. Throughout his life, my grandfather lived in a village near Hazaribagh in Ranchi, Jharkhand. Paranormal activity was a common occurrence and a part of life where he resided. There was a superstition among the natives of the village that a woman who dies while pregnant would become a Chudayal, a witch. The only way to prevent this was by crossing the arms of the corpse and driving a long nail through both of them. Once, in the early 1960s, when my grandfather was around 14 years old, a pregnant woman who lived in the neighborhood passed away. Usually the corpse is cremated, but due to the superstition, the villagers dare not come near it. Hence, they left her body under a nearby banyan tree. Rumors began circulating throughout the village that they had forgotten to put a nail through the corpse and that the woman would now become a Judael. The rumors reached the ears of the schoolboys, and being reckless teenagers, they dared each other to drive a nail through the corpse. Enough taunts from his mates led my grandfather into accepting the challenge. At midnight, he reached the banyan tree with a nail, quickly crossing the arms of the corpse and hammering it in. Then, he ran away into his house and slept throughout the night. He was woken up by his mother screaming at him. "What did you do? Where were you last night?" she said. "Mother, I haven't done anything," he lied. "You drove a nail through her corpse, didn't you?" she inquired. "How do you know about that?" he said, bewildered at his mother's knowledge. "Last night at around 3 a.m., someone began knocking on our door. I thought it was some emergency and decided to open it. Our neighbor who just passed away was standing outside and crying profusely. I felt scared but mustered up the courage to ask her what was wrong. She told me that she had always treated you like a son and that you disrespected her by putting a nail through her. She told me to ask you what she had done to suffer such a fate." After saying this, she disappeared. My great-grandmother concluded. My grandfather felt very guilty for what he had done. He removed the nail from her corpse, gave her a proper cremation, and performed all rituals that are supposed to be performed by a son.